C1G, number 16B.
So, with this bridge, you see, which I recapitulate those 4 points quickly with this bridge, we find, so to say, our attitude which we should take in regard to the first record of creation in relation to the second record of creation, the truth about creation versus the belief, an erroneous belief about creation. We stand, so to say, in the middle and say, what should I do? What should I believe? How should be my attitude? Because both senses of creation flow in towards us. We have a spiritual sense of what creation is, but we also live and move on a material world with all its aggressive suggestions of error. And therefore, what is our attitude? This bridge shows that attitude, and I think Mrs. Eddy would bring it out even more clearly than the biblical text. We still have to remember what Mrs. Eddy said right at the beginning of the chapter, that she says that the Old Testament, especially the beginning of the Old Testament, has rude, crude symbols and is obscured. So that we only have some indications in the Bible what the Bible wants to bring out, symbolized through those symbols that they had at that time. So that it is absolutely legitimate that Mrs. Eddy would give now her more elaborated version of that point, that it can take in explanations that are not in the biblical verses, because after all, as a revelator of God, she has the right to bring revelation further and up to date. This record of creation here, the second one, the Jehovistic document, was written round about 850 BC, but it was only written down about 850 BC. It was told from and handed down long before that, perhaps 1,000 years before that. So that we really should not take, we should not be surprised that Mrs. Eddy takes the right and say, now I lift up that whole story into a more scientific presentation. And shows therefore what? That she says, now be clear that the foundation of creation, the building blocks of foundation of creation, are the Word of the Word. Namely, mind, spirit, soul. Namely, that only mind creates, and that that mind must be spirit, that it creates spiritually. And at the point of soul, that's now interesting, you see, she does not say, and that creation has unchanging identity, as she said in the first day of creation. But here soul is appealing to us, to our attitude. What shall we do? And soul here says, you know, therefore mind and spirit come from above. Creation comes from above and not from beneath. Therefore giving us a sense that we should rise above the false sense of creation. And that at once triggers off really the second block, the Word as the Christ, can you see? Which says, therefore, actually, we should have that sense of resurrection and rise above the earth and the soil. Have a resurrected attitude, and therefore with our consciousness, resurrect us to where? To the harmony of being principle, which is eternal being life. So, can you see, in the first block you have something that was not in the first record of creation, namely that tone of soul, which says, you know, that it comes from above and not from beneath. In the second block there is something there that was not in the first record of creation, which says to us, you know, you should lift yourself above this false sense of creation. And then she comes to where does Christianity, where again she gives us that touch, where she really shows that we have to do now with a creation that is eternal, but that's not enough. At the point of truth, you have to go and acknowledge it. That's again something that was not in the first record of creation, because the first record of creation would not show what we have to do. The first record of creation only shows what God does. And so here we have another hint, what should be our attitude, and say, we should therefore acknowledge, you see, joyfully acknowledging now and forever God's supremacy. That's our contribution. And finally, in the last block in the word, as science in life, truth and love, she also shows again, yes, what shall you do with that immortality sense, with that immortal creation, which should be now engraved into the heart, into the understanding and heart. Can you see how you should engrave it with the point of a diamond and the pen of an angel? That we must do. That's our contribution. We have to discipline our consciousness with a sharp diamond and engrave within our understanding that nothing goes on but the first record of creation. And that we engrave that so sharply, so distinctly, until it is coming out very clear, and then see that it actually should be like a pen of an angel. We should see the beauty of it, the bigness of it, the warmth of it, the promise of it, the greatness of it, all that we should see, and then that becomes tender. Yes. Did you ever read those few paragraphs in your 30, 40 years of Christian Science? Could you ever make anything out of it? Can you see the beauty when we put a text into categories? Can you see that? So you see, it's not enough to say, well, all is in the textbook. Yes, all is in the textbook. Thank God all is in the textbook. So we don't have to turn to any other authority. But at this moment to say, well, it's all in the textbook and you just can read it there, what else is needed, then we can really see from our own experience that this is not studying the textbook, it's reading the textbook. Studying the textbook is seeing the text in its science, in its system, in its categories. And only if we see it in its categories, it begins to become creative for us. Isn't it creative what you just heard by taking those, how many paragraphs? One, two, three paragraphs. Taking those three paragraphs and putting it into a science. And then suddenly the whole thing begins to enlarge and becomes tangible to consciousness. And it gathers meaning, but a meaning that is consistent in itself. Where every sentence, so to say, is linked up with the other sentence, forms a whole, and that whole is a message that gives new meaning. That you have experienced right now. And this is only a small illustration how we really need science to interpret the textbook, and not the reader to interpret the textbook. Every dumb reader can interpret the textbook in his way. That's no big job. But the system of science must interpret the textbook, just as the principle of the universe must interpret the universe, and not people, must interpret the universe. That brings us now to the second record of creation. And there is a bridge there. Well, just let me talk a little bit first about the second record of creation as a whole, before we go into further detail. We already know that the second record of creation is a false record. It is not a false creation. It is not an erroneous creation, because it isn't a creation. It's only a false sense of it, a false belief of creation. The second record of creation is nothing per se, has no identity, no reality, has therefore no existence per se. It is a belief, and we always have a belief, a false belief, when we have not understood the subject. So if we understand the first record of creation, we will also understand the second record of creation. But without understanding the first record of creation, we can hardly understand the second record of creation, because we would take it as something real. Now, the question always comes up, why bother about error? Why bother about the beliefs in error? Is it not enough, as what Mrs. Eddy has said right at the beginning of Genesis, that in truth error is unknown, that it does not enter the realm of divine science, so why should we bother about the false record? But Mrs. Eddy also has said right at the beginning of the chapter that she has said that this deflection of being, meaning the second record of creation, that this deflection of being rightly viewed, how comes rightly viewed? We can only rightly view it from the standpoint of the first record of creation, serves to suggest the proper reflection of God and the spiritual actuality of man, etc., etc. You can see what is meant, that considering the second record of creation from a standpoint of understanding is a great help. It is not something negative, it's something very positive. Naturally, on the level of Christian Science. And as we are always, as students, very much on the level of Christian Science, we should heed these indications. Because she said that evil is brought into view only as the unreal in contradiction to the real and unreal. So that evil is brought into view in order that we understand better what is good and what is the real. Further, she says that error serves as waymarks to the one mind. And she brings up that whole subject, that actually an understanding of error is necessary in order to understand truth. For instance, she says, for the purpose of seeing the necessity for investigating error and understanding error, you know, she says in the textbook, that the teacher feels morally obliged to open the eyes of his students that he may perceive the nature and methods of error. So it belongs to the teaching of Christian Science that we are really investigating the nature of error. She didn't like it at first to do that. And you remember that statement where she said, I shall not forget the cost of investigation. For this age, the method and power of error. It wasn't very easy. And we always see that as long as we tell the student, or even to ourselves, the positive sense of the science of being, the absolute sense of the science of being, we don't chemicalize easily. But the moment we uncover what is error and what are the ways and methods and operation of error, the moment something in the human mind says, I don't want to hear of it, it's all rubbish, it's anyway not God, so I don't want to hear it, and usually begins to chemicalize. She also says that the knowledge of error, this is very important, and of its operation must precede that understanding of truth which destroys error. You see, one has to read it very carefully, because if we just read it superficially, we would say a knowledge of error and of its operation must precede that understanding. Which understanding? Not just understanding. The knowledge of error must not precede understanding as such, because it can't. In order to have a consciousness of error, we must first have a consciousness of truth, because only truth can show what error is by contradiction. But she means that it must precede that understanding of truth which destroys error. That is necessary. Meaning, it's all right to culture our understanding along the line of truth and fill our consciousness with truth. But she says, in order that we have that understanding of truth which can really destroy error, you jolly well have first to know, what she says, to know error and its operation. So, can you see what she means? Only then, when we have to use truth over error, in order to control error, we must first understand really the nature of error. Then that must precede. So she says, also you must find error to be nothing. Then and only then do you handle it in science. Again, it's the same tonality that she says. We cannot handle error in science if we do not first find out that error is nothing. It doesn't say, just state that error is nothing. Just say that error is nothing, and that's okay. That will handle error. It doesn't, and you know it doesn't. You repeat, and you know, and all we do that, we know that we say, yes, error is nothing, error is no thing, no place, no occasion, no channel, no power. We know that we say it. Did it ever do the trick? Not very often. Because stating a truth is not understanding the truth. And so she asks always that we first must really understand that error is actually nothing. And only then can we handle it as nothing, or else we handle error as something. She even says that ignorance of the error to be eradicated sometimes subjects you to its abuse. So if we are actually ignorant about error and just close our eyes to it and don't look at it and don't want to hear anything in it and just wipe it under the carpet and say it's not there, it subjects us to its abuse. We are abused by that. We are not freed from it. She says, error, uncondemned, is not nullified. So if we cannot see really that error is brought back to the land of naught, to nothingness, it is not nullified. It's still there. Well, these are just a few indications that show the terrific necessity of understanding not only the first record of creation, but also the second record of creation, but understanding not as a reality, but understanding it as a counterfeit of the first record of creation. And therefore, we can only see that we can understand the second if we first understand the first. So, she is quite definite about the relationship between the first record of creation and the second record of creation. I just give you a few passages, because that is what we had in the study material. We asked there the difference between the first and second record of creation. A, the difference between the Jehovistic and the Eloistic documents, we have indicated that. And then on the B, read the whole text and make notes on how Mrs. Eddy shows that the second record is what? Not the opposite of the first, but the exact opposite of the first. On that exact really lies a lot of stress, because it is not just saying as a block, well, the second record of creation is false record of creation, that's a false record of creation, just the opposite of the true record of creation. And with that, we feel that we have said something big. No. We have to see that the first record of creation has a whole structure within itself. So that we must also see that the second record of creation must show that same structure as a counterfeit of the first. Therefore, we'll see as we go through that the same layout that we have in the first record of creation will be seen also in the second record of creation. Mrs. Eddy says, in regard to these two records, that the second record of creation presents the opposite error, and the opposite error. If the first record, she says, is true, then the second must be wrong if it's the opposite. And therefore they must be antagonistic and not complementary, as theology has always used them as complementary. Not only are they the exact opposite, but it is also so that the lie claims to be true, but even worse, it's not only the opposite, the lie says, I am true, and so she feels that the purpose, really, of the second account in Genesis is to depict, really, the falsity of error and the effects of error. How does she compare those two records? If you have done what was in the assignment here under B, under that assignment B, and have taken the text and have done some selective reading, just reading through the whole text and asking yourself, where does she bring out the difference between the first and second record of creation in a general way, you will have found round about 36 references where she speaks only about this very point. If we recapitulate that, we can see that from the point of view of mind, if I take all these references, that from the point of view of mind, she would say that the first record of creation gives the true history, that the second record of creation gives the false history, the history of error, the story of error. From the point of view of spirit, we can see that the first record of creation, she says, gives the reality, the second record the unreality, that the first record gives the straight line of spirit, the second record the deviation of that straight line of spirit, that it is a spiritual creation, and the other one is a material creation. Can you hear? In spirit, that it gives the proper reflection in the first, and the second gives the deflection of being, where matter is cooperating with spirit. Or from the point of view of soul, it shows that it is giving really no history of sins, sicknesses, deaths, that they have nothing in it, whereas the second record of creation makes a reality of evil. What is the first record? She says it's a record of signs, the signs of divine creation, the signs of Genesis. It's spiritually scientific, it's a scientific record. Whereas on the opposite, the second record of creation, he gives the opposite of principle and says, well, it's the exact opposite of a science. It's an erroneous theory. It's just a hypothesis and not a principle. It is actually material mythology. Also, from the point of view of life, the first record of creation is shown as having no beginning, no end, whereas the second record is mortal. And when she comes to depict it through the qualities of truth, then we have really the great statements. In she depicts the first record of creation as the truth of divine creation. The first record is the record of truth. And now when she depicts the second record, it is the history of the untrue image of God, a false history, the history of error. Can you hear all about error? The opposite, namely error, an erroneous theory. It is the exact opposite of truth, a picture of error, error simulating the work of truth. It depicts the falsity of error and the effects of error, that which contradicts the truth of being. It is a lie, claiming to be truth, a lie about God, and it teaches mortals never to believe a lie. And also from the standpoint of love, she shows those two records. The first record is all, that all is the work of God, and all is good, and all belongs to God. The second record shows men broken away. Can you see? No more the unity of God and men, broken away from deity. Man revolving in an orbit of its own by being broken away. And all comes from beneath instead of all comes from above in the first record of creation. Okay.